Hi, I'm Claire Mitchell QC. Welcome to the Witches of Scotland podcast. I'm a lawyer who specialises in miscarriage of justice cases, and we're bringing you this podcast because we want to tell you about the women who were accused, prosecuted, convicted, and ultimately executed as witches in Scotland.
I'm Zoe Venditozzi, and I'm a writer who's always had an interest in the witches, and I feel that this dark mark against Scotland needs a reckoning.
The campaign Witches of Scotland wants three things. Firstly, a pardon for all those convicted of witchcraft. Secondly, an apology for all those who were accused as witches. And finally, a national monument in recognition of all those who are affected by this terrible miscarriage of justice.
Over the forthcoming weeks, we'll be talking to a whole host of experts about the history and the modern day connections to the Witches of Scotland. Hello, and welcome to the Witches of Scotland podcast. It's been a wee while since you've last heard from us. We've been on our summer holidays, where Claire and I variously travelled to a music festival in Hertfordshire. Claire, do you remember that?
In the dim and distant past, I do. I remember how naturally you took to the world of camping.
So we got invited to speak at Stand and Calling in Hertfordshire. And it was Claire that went on stage and did the chit chat. And it was really interesting. It was a panel with Professor Marion Gibson and with A.K. Blakemore, who's a writer, and with Amy Kingsmill, who is a performance artist that you'll remember we interviewed quite some wee while ago about what she was doing with the British Library. So those four were in a panel talking about the witch trials and that sort of thing. And it was really cool. It was really nice to get invited down there. We travelled down in Claire's camper van and took quite a while to get there. And then when we got there, the tent that I was going to be sleeping in fell apart, but luckily we managed to get it all sorted out. Camping is not within my comfort zone, but we managed along very well, didn't we, Claire?
We managed fine, and I never thought the Witches of Scotland would end up on a playlist with Primal Scream at the top, mm-hmm. Grandmaster Flash, and then right down at the bottom in tiny letters, Witches.
Very exciting. And we got to see Self-Esteem, which was amazing. Oh my God, they were so good. And Dry Cleaning, also so good. And I got to have a chat with Dom from Dick and Dom.
You did.
Quite exciting. Anybody that has children that are maybe older than, say, probably 14 or 15, which mine are, will probably be familiar with Dick and Dom's work from CBBC. Claire had no idea what was going on. But anyway, we should maybe move on. That was very exciting. That was nice. We've done another few cool things. One that we can't really talk about just now. That's really irritating. People do that, I know, but we'll maybe talk about that later on in a few episodes' time. We went to visit something quite interesting at the Andrew Carnegie Birthplace Museum, didn't we, in Dunfermline?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We contacted the Andrew Carnegie Museum and asked whether or not they had one of the two walking sticks that were made from Lilith Eadie's, I don't want to say coffin, because it wasn't a coffin, it was just a box. But when we had Doug Spears on talking about the history of Lilith Eadie, he told us that two walking sticks had been made from the box that she was kept in. And we think that one of them was in Fife. In fact, two of them were in Fife. And we went along to see it, and it was so interesting, yet at the same time, so terrible. Mm. So there was an engraving on it which said where it came from, which is the box that Lilith Eadie was kept in. And it was there just to go and see at the museum. So we're really, really grateful to them for having us. And we have discussed the possibility of doing some work with them in the future. So that would be great. So we'll keep you updated in relation to that.
Yes, yeah, definitely. This is quite a kind of a museum and galleries episode, actually. There's quite a few different things that are going on that we're going to talk about in this episode. So that's quite nice, quite fitting that we mention that at the top.
Sure. Can I just say that when mm-hmm. we plan this out, every week, Zoe, at episode 61, are you or are you not supposed to express some general incredulity? And can we please have it now?
Yes, I will do that. I feel somewhat out of practice with the podcast because it feels like it's been ages. Plus, I'm back at work as a teacher and my brain is quite mushy. So bear with me in this moment of my time, of my life. But anyway, Claire, is this episode 61 today?
It is, Zoe, episode 61. That means that in the time that we have been doing this, we have spoken to over 60 people.
Oh, that's a lot of people. Who'd have thunk it, eh? My mental maths isn't tremendously brilliant, but I reckon that we have maybe done 56 more episodes than we intended to.
that's just about it. But if we don't say too much about it, David might not notice.
Yeah, don't mention to him, because I don't think he has noticed. No. I think he loves the content so much and loves to hear our voices so much.
Yeah,
probably not. There, we've got so many other things lined up. It's not even going to get to 64 and go, okay, that's that then.
I know, also don't mention that to him either.
Okay, let's just back away from this conversational cul-de-sac as you describe them.
Back away.
Okay, you've got something that is in the news, don't you?
This is in the news. Okay.
That was a sound effect. I hope you liked
it. Thanks. I like that echo. We have quite a lot in the news this week. The first and perhaps the most urgent piece of in the news is Shona Cowie got in contact to see her debut Fringe production, which is called With the Devil's Assistance, is on right now between the 22nd and the 28th of August at 4:45 at the Scottish Storytelling Centre.
Yes. It's not on the 25th or the 27th.
Yes, thank you. It's not on those days, but we would highly recommend you get down to see it. It's about Margaret Osborne, a 17th century entrepreneur from Ayr, who was executed as a witch on the high street for, inverted commas, making a pact with the devil to build a house in a night and for turning into a cat.
I mean, sounds amazing.
She does. That's the kind of woman I'd like to have a night out with.
Was she supposed to make the house when she was a cat? Or did she turn into a cat after she'd built the house?
I think these are two separate events, because I imagine opposable thumbs are better for building a house. But I think what she might have done is she might have gone into a whirling dervish, you know, like a Tasmanian devil to build the house. Like, yeah. I really think that was the story, that she went round and round and round faster and faster.
Really?
And the house was built.
The things that people, women mostly, were accused of with these trials and with the, you know, what they copped to, obviously we know that they didn't really, are just so ludicrous. You know, it's hard to take that seriously at all. You know, the idea that you could be executed for, you know, supposedly turning into a cat. I mean, like, absolutely crazy. And making a house in the night, you know, surely there would be some sort of burden of evidence, Claire. You know, like, here's, you know, people would say there was no house here, and then here is the house that was built. You know, like, it's ridiculous.
Again, it's just confession evidence. Confession evidence is the most powerful form of evidence, because it's a statement against self-interest. She will have confessed to making this house. She will have confessed to turning into a cat and then, of course, turning back into a human again. And that's all really that was needed.
But surely, if you've confessed to building a house in a night, the house is there.
I think conveniently.
Taking it down again.
Yeah, conveniently it was taken down again in a night.
Nonsense, isn't it? It's crazy. Yeah. Anyway, so tell us more about the performance.
Well, it's had great rave reviews. It's got 4 stars in The Guardian. The Guardian says that it's shape-shifting woman links past and present in a show that slips confidently from light to creepy shade. Cowie makes unexpected connections between past and present. It is to do with women's marginalisation and repression, something reflected in the vast preponderance of women on her list of those executed for witchcraft around her native Ayr. And also gets a great review from The Scotsman, another 4 stars. And The Scotsman picks up on the sort of modern relevance, and part of the review says, more than just a well-sculpted story, the thematic thread she's weaving in tie in with some even more intriguing and relevant than the sum of its parts. A purposeful examination of feminism, patriarchy and capitalism then and now. So I are really looking forward to get down and see that later on this week.
I'm going to try and go, I think, maybe on Sunday. I think I might take my daughter down on Sunday.
Oh, that would be fab.
That sounds really fascinating. And I think it is absolutely worth going to see, even if you don't already have an interest in The Witch Trials. It sounds fantastic. But particularly if that is something you're interested in, I think it'd be really fascinating to see a theatrical representation of what it was like, you know, because it's one thing us talking about it or reading about it in books, but to see somebody acting out in a way that's like a non-naff, non-kind of sexy Halloween, or like, all, you know, the tired tropes about witches, I think would be really fascinating. So I think I'm really hoping I can swing it to go on Sunday.
Cool. Oh. And if people are thinking of going to some other places, we have some museum news.
We do have museum news. This is like a subsection of In the News. So now it's museum news. I don't really have a good sound effect. All I can think of is like a creaking door. That's it. And then that's you into the cataloguing area of stuff. Right. The Museum of Abernethy, which Claire has talked about before, they are doing a witch hunt walk. So if you're in the local area, go down there. You get a map to walk around and see places related to the witch hunt, both real and from local folklore. There are two different walks. One is an hour and a half and the other is an hour and 40 minutes. That's quite good, isn't it? So you could do two nice size walks, not too long, but enough that you feel like you're getting your steps up and learning at the same time.
Yeah, and it's really, really good because it takes you to local areas, including an area where it was said that women as witches were executed, but it makes it clear in the blurb that it's unlikely to be that certain place, but talks about it from folklore. So it's interesting to examine how local areas have kept stories about their witchcraft trial alive through those sorts of things. And it's really, really good that they're telling the stories of the folklore, and they're also telling the actual history insofar as they can make it out, which I think is really cool.
Is it on for a while?
If you get a map, you can go any time, because I suppose you're taking yourself to the areas. I don't know how long the map's available for, but it's certainly up online and you can look at it. So
I'll have to do that as well. That'd be good. Okay, and do we have some more museum news? We do. We're now moving to Nairn Museum. Yeah, there's a great event on this Saturday, so that's the 27th of August, from 1 till 3 at Nairn Museum. They're holding an opening event to mark the you know, the exhibition that they've got on just now, which is about Isabel Gowdy. Julia Jeffrey will be there to speak about the work on display from her collaborative art and music project, where the music is by Gillian Chadwick, and then there'll be an opportunity for questions afterwards. Julia says, "Highland folk, it'd be lovely to see you if you can make it along. The exhibition also features fascinating artefacts in the museum's collection and runs until the 31st of October. So even if you can't make the launch on Saturday, it's on there until the end of October. There's a whole series of tie-in events organised by the museum manager, Melissa Davies. And also at the opening event, there will be some chat as well from Ash Williams, who you'll remember was on episode 45 talking about his book about Isabel Gowdy. So the event, the opening event, is this Saturday, the 27th, 1 till 3, but the museum show about Isabel Gowdy is on until the 31st of October. So I think that's really worth going along to have a look. We've seen some of the art and it's lovely. Well, lovely is entirely the wrong word. It's striking and it's definitely worth going and having a look at. Now, they've got a Facebook page, so you can hop on there to get further details about, you know, what to find and so on. So I think that sounds like a really great thing to go along and have a look at.
So that is an end of the museum news. But I think it's really, really great that at the moment there seems to be a real surge of museum interest in the witchcraft trials. So it's really, really brilliant that people are engaging. And of course, we have groups such as the Calder Witch Hunt who are now looking on to put another event as well. So if you have any local events that you're putting on that are witch hunt related, please do get in contact with us, because we love to let people know about these things so that they can come and see it. We're contacted regularly by people saying, is there anything on, or is there anything in my local area? So please do let us know and we'll give that a shout out.
Fantastic.
Final in the news. Decades before the Salem witch trials, the infamous Salem witch trials, took place, in Massachusetts, women were being tried, convicted and executed for witchcraft. And efforts are now underway to have them exonerated. You'll remember in the US system, Zoe, they can do what's called exoneration rather than pardon. We don't have that open to us.
So yeah, that's sometimes people get confused by that because they've seen American films and they think that we have that, but we don't have that.
Indeed, and Americans sometimes get in contact saying you're asking for the wrong thing, you need to ask for an exoneration. But sadly, we don't have that in our system. So a pardon is the best thing that we can get. We'll talk about that in a minute. But at the moment, efforts are underway to have these people exonerated. Again, they were mostly women. To find out more about that, follow the Connecticut Witch Trial Exoneration Project. You'll be able to find that at CT Witch Hunt on Twitter. And they currently have a change.org petition, which you can sign to show your support. Their Twitter page, if you follow them, has lots of original documents from the trials. So it's really interesting, if a bit difficult and challenging for the old eyesight, at least my eyesight, to try and read what is written there. But it's very interesting. We've also been in contact with them, and in fact, they say they're delighted to come and speak to us about their project. So hopefully we'll have them on fairly soon in the long list of people that we have still to speak to. But speaking of, pardon, Zoe.
Yes, it's very, very important that we flag this up to our listeners just now, because time is coming along with the public consultation document that MSP Natalie Dawn has put forward. It's really, really important that people get involved with that and then give their own answers to the consultation. It only takes a couple of minutes. You need to just add your name to those who think that obtaining a legislative pardon for those convicted of witchcraft is a good thing. If you listen to the podcast and agree with us, please do get involved with signing the consultation. Just remember that it's not just about this happening hundreds of years in the past. It's got a modern relevance, as we know with the work that Leo Igwe's done. So these are things that are happening now. It's still really relevant. So please do share, tell people about it, so we have as many people as possible supporting it, because the more support we have, the more likely we are to have success in moving the bill forward. It doesn't take much to do, but it could really have a big impact. And it's so important to so many of us.
Yeah, it's only a wee bit of effort to restore the names of those killed and bring what posthumous justice we can. And we've spoken many times when people said, what's the point? They're dead. It makes no difference. The point is that if we can actually say what we did to these people was wrong, we can make it clear that at least even in the 21st century, we accept that what happened to these people was wrong and their names can be cleared. And I think that's still every bit as important. And as you've said, Zoe, it also helps campaigners who do incredible work like Leo Igwe. So please, on all our socials, Twitter, Insta, Facebook, etc., we've got links to the public consultation document. Please do find them. And also, if you can, if you think any of your friends or family would be interested in it, please share, so those people can have an opportunity to have their say as well.
Fantastic. Okay, so going back to the women and men, but on this occasion, the women that were accused of being witches, let's bring our focus back to some people that were involved in, I believe, Nairnclare this week.
Yeah, because we were speaking earlier on about Nairn Museum and the most famous, inverted commas, witch, Isabel Goudie. There aren't records for Isabel Goudie in the same way as there are for some other people. There is the confession of Isabel Goudie, but not the same court records. And there have indeed even been questions about whether Isabel Goudie was a real person. No doubt when we go to Nairn, they'll be able to tell us whether or not she was or wasn't. But what I thought I would do is I would look at the people from Nairn who were accused of witchcraft and bring their names forward today for people. Now, I found two people that were accused in the parish of Nairn. The cases appear to be interrelated. There's very little information about both of them. The first one is Agnes McGilverich. There was a commission to try her on the 12th June 1662. That was given by the Privy Council, who granted permission to prosecute. And no less than 10 commissioners were involved in her case. And the records show the names of all those commissioners, which we won't bear repeating here. And the other person in an interconnected case, her name was Agnes Nick Ain Vane. I think that's the way to pronounce sort of my best pronunciation. I'm sorry if it's wrong. Again, the request for a warrant to prosecute her came from the Privy Council, and it granted that on the 12th of June 1662. It looks like both cases were interrelated. Possibly one person confessed and said the other was a witch, and that person confessed as well. You know, one of those sorts of interrelated cases. And sadly, we don't have any information as to what happened at the trial. But today we remember those two women, Agnes McGilveridge and Agnes Nick Ain Vane, as people who were women and not witches.
So we remember them. And today we move on to introduce our guest for this episode, who has been working on a project to really help people to remember women particularly. And there are also some instances of people that had been accused of witches as well. So our guest today is Anna Day, who is Cultural Public Programme Manager at Perth and Kinross Council. Her job really is to develop new cultural programmes in Perth, which are to engage communities and creatives. And she's also managing the opening programme around the new City Hall project for 2024. So Anna comes from a really interesting background with lots of different cultural offerings. And this is what she's working on just now. And there's a project that we're going to talk to her about today. So without any further ado, welcome Anna Day. I'm delighted to welcome to the podcast today our very good friend, Anna Day, who's going to talk to us about a project she's been doing recently in her role. So first of all, Anna, welcome to the podcast.
I'm delighted to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming on. Now, can you tell us what your role is, and then maybe tell us a wee bit about your project and why that links to our campaign?
So I work for Perth and Kinross Council, and my role really started just a few weeks before COVID. We've got a new museum opening in 2024 in the middle of town, and my role is to take all the amazing stories that are inside the museum and tell them outside. That's where it started. And when COVID hit, obviously everything was delayed. So I started, you know, trying to gather the stories of Perth and Kinross. This is the Scottish Government Year of Scottish Stories. And what I found was that there are a lot of men very visible within Perth and Kinross, or Perth in particular, in the street names, in the buildings, as with lots of cities. But the women's stories were pretty hidden, and there are some amazing women's stories. So this project kind of spoke to both the need to tell those women's stories and to start to tell people what's going to be in this new museum. So we have a project called Raise the Roof, and 20 community groups across Perth and Kinross were working. They were given a list of 50 stories, which was quite difficult for me, as I really wanted some of these women to be picked on that list of 50, and they weren't. So some of the great stories just didn't make it to the final round. People like Jessie Mann, who was one of the first sort of female photographers. I thought we could do a great project around that, but she didn't get picked. It was up to the community groups. So we ended up with 20 stories, 20 community groups. They've been working with an artist. They've been researching the stories, really getting into them. There's a group in Kinross who have been to visit the woman's grave. They've tracked down her ancestors. They've, you know, really got into it. So the different groups have all been working on these projects. Then they handed over their information to an artist called Vanessa Lawrence, who created wire sculptures of each of them. And again, in Perth and Kinross, as in lots of places, there's very, very few statues of women. There's very few places. There is one of the Fair Maid on the High Street, but there's very few places you can go and sort of celebrate the stories of women. So we felt this was important, that they were visible throughout the city. And the thing I love about these statues is you can choose to look through them because they're wire. You know, you can choose almost not to see them. Or you can choose to, you know, go and interact with them and read the stories and, you know, really start to understand women's history, which really felt like a reflection of how women are seen. So I think that's the reason, I guess, I'm here today, is because two of the stories that were picked were stories about women who were accused of witchcraft. Both of the stories were picked, one, I think, probably on a locality basis. One of the witches the woman accused of witchcraft called the Witch of Monsey, and it was a local group there who chose her and wanted to find out about her story. They actually found she supposedly was betrayed by the villagers, was accused of being a witch, and and had been a healer and had been treating people all her life. And when it came to the trial, the villagers turned against her, and where they had been treated, they claimed they hadn't. And the only person who stood up for her was the laird, and she gave him a precious stone, which they still have to this day. So the group have like interacted and gone and found out, and you can go the place where she was burnt. She was burnt in the end at Castle Monsey, and you can go and see Kate McNiven, or Kate Nicknivin, is lots of ways of spelling her name, her stone. And there is, you know, it's doubtful whether the entire story happened in exactly the way that it is recorded. As with many of these stories, there is a possibility that her story actually is an amalgamation of the stories of lots of witches, and she's almost used as a talisman for those stories. So yeah, so there's her story, and then there's Bessie Wright, who actually, she was accused either two or three times, it differs in different books, but wasn't ever actually found guilty, which is quite bonkers, because obviously that's fairly rare. So her healing book was taken from her by the Church of Scotland, who were not her biggest fans, it has to be said. And she went through two or three trials. I think she was found guilty once, but was not punished. She was put in jail, and then her son paid a bail to get her out, which is an unusual story for a woman accused of witchcraft. So Bessie's statue is there as well. So it's a real mix of people, but there are those women accused of witchcraft within the stories.
It's brilliant, Anna. I mean, I've not been to it yet, but I've looked at the map that you've got. And there's so many fantastic different stories of women. And what you said earlier on about the fact that there were so many more stories you wanted to tell, that's exactly what Sarah Sheridan said when she wrote the book Where Are the Women? Because she actually thought, am I going to be able to fill a book with stories? Are we going to be able to find enough stories? And she said by the end, she was like so sad. And I think she said her mantra was no woman left behind, as she tried to cram as many stories of women into the book as she possibly could. So it's brilliant that you've managed to get so many, and there are many, but maybe there's time for more.
Why do you think that it's important to have statues reflecting things that women have done?
I think it's about visibility of stories. So I think it's a really easy way for stories to be visible is through a statue, because they tend to be in places where people pass all the time. So it's a shortcut almost to being, you know, a way to tell people more about a certain person or about a moment in time. I have quite a lot of feelings about memorials and statues, so I do feel they should be specific to a person. I think the memorials and statues that are for, you know, women who died in a place or something tell one particular story, but they don't speak to that sort of universal story of struggle or women, or, you know, what I hope with the women that we've got. And there are women in this trail, apart from the two that I've mentioned, who are alive. We've got Eve Muirhead, who's obviously the Olympian. And then we've got people like the goddess Caillac, who was the original witch, some say, but, you know, who is a mythological being. So there's a real mix in there, but I hope that people take something from this, from each of those stories in particular. So rather than being a story of place, you know, if they're about, you know, the herring women, or if they're about, you know, women who've done a particular thing, they're a bit more universal. So I think memorials are that shortcut to storytelling. I think they are really visible, and I think it's important, even in this day and age, that people see that equality and see women being celebrated in a really visible sense, as much as they see the old bloke on the horse, or the warmonger, or whoever it is that they are looking at those statues of.
Absolutely. That was like one of the reasons that we kicked off the campaign, Anna, when I was standing in Princes Street Gardens and I was looking around thinking there isn't one named woman here. We've got a named dog and a named bear, but literally no woman. And this is one of Edinburgh's most prominent public spaces. There was a statue of, I think, an unnamed woman, but it was a sort of an image of a woman portraying something as a generality.
Yeah.
And I just thought, this is bizarre that we don't have this reflection in public life. So I'm just so delighted and can't wait to get round to seeing it.
And I think that's a general reflection of, you know, any history book or any, you know, history is written by men is, you know, a very true story. So I think it's a reflection of the inequality of visibility of women generally. I think, and I have not checked this, but there's a very sort of younger creative cultural person working in Perth and Kinross who has been really fighting for more prominence of women in museums and in the city. And she had said, Taylor Wagoner is her name, and she had said that there are more statues of fish than women in Perth. So I haven't gone around and counted, but it feels like that's entirely possible.
I wouldn't be surprised by that at all. You know, just
and hi, Taylor, as well. We interact with Taylor as Witches of Scotland.
Oh, do you? Twitter.
Yeah. So, hi.
I mean, certainly as a woman moving through the world, and it's not just unique to this country. And certainly when I've been in North America, it's been the same sort of thing there. It's men that you tend to see everywhere. And we've talked about this so many times. But it's very important to mark, like, you know, women and men, obviously, in our history in the past, you know, and that's a really big part of our campaign, is that you need to learn from the past to make sure that in the future that you're making, you know, as humans, we're making better choices and that we understand things that have gone before. And Anna, I know that you, in your family, in your background, that there's something that's quite key to your family that you've marked, if you want to talk about that a wee bit.
So yeah, I mean, we are a family descended from German Jewish refugees who left. My grandparents actually knew each other. They were sort of childhood sweethearts. So they left Germany about the same time before war broke out. But, and it's a very long family history. So my grandfather was the ambassador to Estonia, and what he did was he took Estonian nationality for the family, which meant that they could escape, but it also meant that his son, my grandmother's young brother, had to join the Estonian army and was never heard of again by any of the family. As an interesting aside, my great-grandfather also did not take his wife, did not give her one of the four passports, took his mistress, which was a
Anna
family shocker.
Anna, why have you not written that novel?
So, and they stayed together, him and the girlfriend, and my gran did eventually rebuild a relationship with her stepmother and dad, which I always think was kind of amazing, because I'm not sure I would have. Anyway.
Hang on, what happened to your actual gran then, your great-gran?
My gran. So she made her own way over, but they were a very wealthy family in Germany and obviously were having to build from nothing. And she made her way over and sadly killed herself.
Anna, that's so awful.
With the children in the proximity as a kind of...
Jeez,
I know. Family... family joy. So yes, so she made it her way over to England and then did not like the life of poverty that was then ahead of her, and also had been left by her husband.
And it was her child that had then been put into the Estonian army and never heard from again.
Yeah.
So would that be your great uncle?
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
So he was, so they were a very sort of wealthy family in Cologne, and my mum and dad were contacted recently by my uncle, great uncle Carlos, he was called, his school, and they had planned a memorial. So they do the things called stumbling stones, and they're essentially like cobbles, but each one gives the name of a Jew who has died or has not, they don't know what's happened to them. And they're placed on streets, and they're just a reminder as you walk past that street of what has happened. And it was an artist, I can't remember the name of the artist, who started this, and it's now become a very popular way to memorialize people who were lost. Especially, he was actually down in their records as having died at Auschwitz, but we don't think that's true. But that was how they had recorded it. But we don't know what happened to him, but he, you know, we assume that he did not make it out of Estonia. Whether he'd have ever been able to find anyone. But the stumbling stones are really interesting because they are such a part of everyday life, and you do find them across Germany, and they are, you know, they replace cobbles, and you know, it's an interesting way of just that reminder of how badly people were treated. And I think that warning not to let it happen ever again, whether you can argue that that has worked or not worked, but I think, it, you know, you need to have these memorials, you need to have reminders that things can go very badly wrong. And how do we stop that from happening again? How do we keep those people in mind who died a result of those actions?
Anna, thanks so much for sharing that with us, particularly the shock. If you'd seen the look of shock on both of our faces when you said that Kate is mistress. But I think that, I mean, that's such a beautiful idea, memorialising people in that way. And Zoe and I have talked about how to try and memorialise those people that were killed in the witchcraft trials. And that would seem like a lovely way, just putting part of it in everyday life so that people see those things. I mean, obviously not to copy the idea, but it just shows that those people who can do these kind of things, the moralisation, etc., can think that way, can think outside the box. And I think that's particularly for Zoe, that's something that she's really keen on seeing for memorialisation for those that were killed of witchcraft.
I love the fact that it's quite sort of ordinary and kind of quotidian, and it's just in everyday life, but it stays that kind of like the sort of the stone in your shoe, that it just keeps reminding you that happened. I think that's so incredibly important. I think that's really cool. I like that. And it's really not flashy either, you know.
No.
It's not whitewashing history either. It's not, you know, here's a, you know, like a just a sad image of a child, which of course has got its place too. But the fact that these were just ordinary people that would have walked along these streets, I love that. I think that's a great idea.
And so have you given your authority, if that was what was being asked for, to have?
And there was a ceremony last October-ish, last year, that quite a lot of the family, we actually had COVID, so we did not go, but quite a lot of the family went, and the school showed us round what would have been his school. And my grandparents' house is still there. And they met the kid, well, he obviously is not a kid now, he was a kid at the time, who was their driver, I think it was. So it was really interesting. But Carlos didn't love school and didn't love Cologne. They had a house in the country that he was much keener on, that they went to see as well. He was quite a gentle kid who was not happy that he was going to be sent off to the Estonian army, funnily enough.
Oh, wee fella.
I know.
Yeah, but that's lovely though that he's been marked, and that he's a presence in your mind and in your kids' minds as well. You know, that's somebody that is a relative and a forebear of yours that you've marked in that way. I think that's really respectful. Like,
I'm so glad it's children that are getting involved in it, because we are so pleased when people contact us to ask. In fact, people have asked us a number of occasions now, Zoe, can we do a child-friendly podcast? I'm not sure what that would be, but it's so good that the idea that we're teaching children about this, I think it's absolutely vital that they get to hear our history, not just through the forms of kings and queens and battles, although they have their place and are important in their own way, but hear the story of everyday people and how things can go well, and equally as importantly, how things can go really badly.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, children these days, certainly my experience with my own children, is have really struggled with the history that they are taught, because so little of it feels like there's a huge relevance to the lives they live now. Whereas I think stories like these, especially for young women, you know, really do feel like they are teaching them something, and they can take something away from them. So I think that is absolutely true. And I think schools don't do the greatest job in this curriculum that my kids are learning. Is exactly the same curriculum that I was learning quite a few years ago, you know, and that feels like it needs to move.
I think it's very much down to individual history teachers that have passions. And we've certainly seen that there are some teachers in Scotland who, for example, are really interested in the witch hunts. So they've developed resources that sound brilliant, and it looks like the kids are incredibly engaged with what they're doing. And there was that event recently in the area south of Edinburgh that you went to, Claire. Was it Peebles?
West Calder. It was fantastic.
West Calder, where the kids have generated the most amazing artwork. And I'm not sure whether it was a collaboration between art teachers and history teachers, or if it was something in the community, I'm not sure, but the work was amazing that we saw online for it. So it's, you know, it's finding things that kids engage with. And I think that the idea that ordinary people, so not, as Claire said, not kings and queens, but ordinary people getting swept up and being really involved in things, whether for good or for bad, is, I reckon, the key is, you know. So I really like this initiative that you're doing with the stories, because people of all ages are going to pass them and go, well, what's that? And engage with it. And that's what we would hope for when we get the state memorial for the witches, which will happen at some point, hopefully. When is the trail on until?
It is on until probably, I say probably because I'll need to take all the statues away. It is on until the start of September, but then all of the women are going to come together. In my head, they're going to be marching down the high street of Perth towards the council buildings in a mad takeover, but I haven't quite had permission for that yet. But they will all be coming together for the mod, which is happening in October, and all their stories are going to be translated into Gaelic so that they have those connections back to Gaelic and to the people who are coming from different areas, so they can learn a bit more about them as well.
Fabulous.
Brilliant.
So people have got what's left of August to go and have a look. And they're just dotted around Perth City Centre.
Dotted around Perth City Centre. There are maps available from Tourist Information, from the museum, pretty much from every hotel in the city centre and roundabout as well. Or they all have QR codes. If you are technically illiterate, then you can ping your QR code and the story will pop up. And on the website, just because there's so little space on the map, there's more information about each woman, and there's information about the community groups as well who chose the woman and the work that they've been doing with artists locally as well. There will be an exhibition of that as well.
It's such a great idea, Anna, and it's also something that people could do their own kind of variations on in other communities. You know, I'd love to see something like that happening across Scotland, you know,
yeah,
where you just see all these different people, and it'd be so great to see people connecting, because they will, all of them will have descendants, you know, and you might even know that you're descended from this amazing, you know, or interesting person. So yeah, that'd be great. So we'll put some images up. We'll link on our Twitter and our other social media. And I would encourage people, including myself and Claire, we need to go along and have a day out in Perth and go.
Absolutely. Yeah.
There's loads going on in Perth. There's also a great exhibition in Perth Museum and Art Gallery called Sin, which has a real mix of images, some very 15th century art through to very modern art, and does talk about sin and the idea of nudity and art and how women have been objectified. So that's worth, if you're going through anyway, definitely check that out as well.
For all of those that are staycationers, that sounds like an absolute perfect day out in Perth.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. Well, Anna,
thank you so much.
No problems. Lovely to talk to you both, and I hope to see you soon.
We really enjoyed it, and thanks so much for sharing, including your own family history. Bye now.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to this week's 61st episode. Thanks for carrying on in this enormous journey that we appear to have all been struck to. So thank you so much. We hope you're still enjoying it. Please do get in touch with us and let us know if there's anything else you'd like us to cover.
Yeah, there are a lot of people getting in contact with us, and I'm taking down scrupulous notes, Zoe, about various things we want to talk to you about. So lots more in the next episode. And now we're back off our holidays. Hopefully our next episode will be in another fortnight's time. Well, almost 3 weeks' time, because this is midweek, but just 2.5 weeks. So we really, really look forward to speaking to you more and engaging with you. As Zoe has said, if you want to catch us, it's probably best trying to catch us on Twitter or Facebook. And also we're on Insta as well, if you want to speak to us there. Zoe, how are things going with you? How are the ravens? How are the raccoons?
Well, they're just back from Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
They were all on their holidays. They wanted to go to Aganapa, but I was like, guys, not after last time. So you went for a slightly classier holiday this time. It was fine, all good. And they're quite relaxed and ready to take on the next stage of their training.
See, when you said Aganapa, I had immediately a visual picture of two raccoons with glow sticks. Like,
that's essentially what started the trouble last time.
Is that what happened?
Yeah, well, they ended up with their glow sticks at the airport, and let me tell you, it was not helpful for landing planes. Let's put it that way. Anyway, that's nothing to do with what we're here to talk about. So, and also, you know, I can't really talk about it anyway. So thanks for joining us this week. Please be in touch. Please, please, please sign the consultation. Share it as widely as you can because time is running out and it's really, really important.
Yeah, share, share, share. Thanks, bye.
Bye.
If you'd like to learn more about the Witches of Scotland, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Sign up for our mailing list at www.witchesofscotland.com to keep updated with the campaign. On that site, you'll be able to find how to link with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.